This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lindmark, Roshan Kanesan and Noelle Lim. It is 6am, Tuesday the 28th of July. It's not just any old regular Tuesday, is it? We've got a bunch of interesting things happening today, including the verdict of the one of the first 1MDB trials that is going to come out later this morning, it might appear. So we're going to be bringing you updates from that, from our team over who are present at the High Court. So be sure to keep it tuned here on BFM. But in the meantime, we are talking about a number of interesting things. Later on, after the 6:30 news, what do we have on the agenda, Noelle?
A slew of international news. So we'll take a look at the Seattle riots, as well as the fact that China seizes U.S. consulate in Chengdu. I guess it's a sort of a retaliation against their closure of their embassy in Houston. And also, coronavirus, COVID-19 cases is still on the rise in our part of the world.
Yeah, Noelle, retaliation to the retaliation from the other retaliation just seems to be the case, the situation perpetually. I'll be taking a different angle completely. We're going to be talking about money, or specifically our wallets. And maybe the FIRE movement may not be for you, but maybe SloFi is the movement for you. What is SloFi? We'll discuss in about 10-15 minutes.
Very interesting. So if you want to weigh in on those conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we're taking a look at one of the premier social media platforms available right now and asking the question of whether or not you'd pay for Twitter. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was More Than a Feeling by Boston, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noelle. And if you, of course, have feelings about whatever it is we're going to be discussing this morning, you can let us know over our various social media platforms, because that's what we're talking about right now, social media, specifically Twitter, because CEO Jack Dorsey has dangled the hint that Twitter could be looking at exploring alternatives to diversify its revenue, I forgot how to English for a second. Specifically, that they might be dangling the possibility of a subscription option. So, you know, Twitter recently reported Q2 earnings that showed a marked dip in their ad revenue. So the idea of potentially paying for Twitter could be is something that they are exploring. Say they're going to be running subscription tests this year, they told CNN. This was reported by CNN. Although Jack Dorsey did also say that the bar for charging users for access for aspects of the service would be set, and I quote, really high. So I guess, I mean, at the very basic level, this raised a question for me of whether or not I would pay to use Twitter. And honestly, probably for me, this would drive me off the service because I'm not a particularly avid social media user to begin with. What about you guys?
Well, I think first of all, Jack is dropping this hint about, you know, testing subscriptions. Obviously, he's testing for reactions to see how people respond to this, how loyal Twitter users will respond to this. I think people like me, I don't really use Twitter, so I would be considered dormant, I think, you know, and then there'll be the dormant users and the casual users. I can't see them wanting to subscribe to this unless the proposition is quite compelling. But of course, the more heavy users, and I would say like the Malaysian politicians or politicians in general, right, in the US, they will probably pay for it if there's something that, you know, if it means getting a better service of something.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone's going to pay for Twitter as is, right? Because unless you're going to say something like ad-free Twitter, so then maybe you start looking at it. It's kind of like YouTube Premium, like, oh, would you pay for that? But I tried YouTube Premium for a month. I still went back to the ads because in this day and age, like, how many subscription services do you want to be paying for as it is, right? But now if you're a power user, you're a content creator, if Twitter can give you better analytics, better targeting, better services, basically add-on value services, then that's maybe something you can charge for a subscription service. Or if they feel they're testing it and they see that there is a market that really hates ads on Twitter, then maybe there's something there, right, to tap into it. Like maybe I don't know what the revenue generation would be from that. But, you know, they did get hit significantly in the last quarter. If you take a look at their financials, they brought in $683 million in the second quarter this year. That was down from $840 million in the same quarter last year. So that's a big drop, $200 million in revenue out the window. And and even the first quarter of this year, they made $800 million in revenue. So definitely something concerning as to how they're going to, I mean, this is also on the back of ad revenue in general, ad expenditure is being cut, right? Mm-hmm. But if big companies are cutting ad expenditure, are people going to start spending on subscription services?
Yeah, that is the question, right? And I guess it depends on what kind of a model these tech companies decide to go for. Because when you were talking about, you know, maybe Twitter could tap into that segment of their users who hate ads, the first thing that came to mind for me was Spotify. Because when I first started using Spotify, obviously I was using the free version, and you know, every couple of songs you would be bombarded by an ad that you couldn't mute, that you couldn't skip, and it drove me mad. And Spotify Premium is, I think, the only subscription service that I regularly pay for, and I would never go back because the ads were so annoying that I will gladly give them the money to be able to listen to a seamless music streaming experience. So whether or not that necessarily translates to a platform like Twitter, where it is easy to scroll past the ad on your Twitter timeline, I don't know. But it also, it would depend on, like you said, Roshan, you know, what else they package into it. Perhaps they could even do something like, not necessarily your first 10 tweets are free, but maybe your first 1,000 tweets are free. And then that would also tap into perhaps those bigger corporations who are dedicated social media users and have to be in order to build their brand, not just corporations, but also potentially political figures, right?
Yeah, so for companies, it's one way to diversify revenue. I think in the case of Twitter, I think advertisers had to pause their campaigns because of sort of that civil unrest, right? Probably seems quite disrespectful to, you know, to be pushing out ads. If the reason is compelling enough to pay for it, why not? For example, WordPress, you use the WordPress templates, right, to do websites. And you know, if you have like a proper website and try to present yourself in as a proper professional, you can't have like, you know, advertisements, you know, floating around on your your website, right? Just looks unprofessional. So you'll gladly just pay for that WordPress sub premium account, and also it comes with a lot of other services, right? So then the question now, I think, would Facebook, for example, Instagram, would they also go towards that subscription model?
I don't know, right? So for Twitter, when you compare it to WordPress, now that's a very good comparison because WordPress, what it does, it caters to the content creator, the semi-pro, not the pro, right? We're talking about people who are dabbling but maybe want to be taken seriously in this. And that can be applied to Twitter as well. Anyone with 1,000 followers and above who maybe wants more power behind what they're doing, the analytics that they see, the ability to reach more people, or even just being able to do more compelling tweets. Maybe you get a different kind of GIF selection. I don't know, like, you know, just giving more value
or
for
suggested
that money.
Suggested interesting posts.
A list every morning of the top trending topics in your area, right? These are things that you can tap into. It's kind of like Google AdWords in a way. I don't know whether that really works on Facebook, because Facebook is not a community platform, right? It's a very closed gatekeeper. It's only your friends. Well, it might work for Instagram, because Instagram again is a public community forum.
I guess it would depend on what aspect of Facebook they
look to revenue,
right? Yeah, pages and groups, the ones that are specifically geared towards an external community rather than just your list of friends. That could potentially be a source of revenue generation. But I mean, Facebook and Instagram, they're also going the retail way. As an avenue for diversifying their sources of revenue. So I don't know whether that's something that Twitter could also potentially explore.
I guess when it comes to Facebook or Instagram or any social media or any media for that matter, would you pay for an ad-free version? I think that's the big question. And then if the answer is yes or no, then you kind of have to make your business decisions based on that.
Having said that, I think advertisements can be quite interesting, right? Opens up to new ideas. I don't know. I find them quite interesting as long as I have the option of just closing those ads.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I think I've clicked the I don't like this ad option on my Twitter enough that they don't know what to suggest to me anymore. So I get the strangest ads, and it is quite an entertaining experience. Do let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or, of course, tweet us at BFM Radio. Tell us whether you would pay for an ad-free version of Twitter. And we're going to be back to talk to you more about SloFi, the concept of SloFi, after these messages. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Everlasting Light by The Black Keys, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now, most of us, I think, have at least heard of the FIRE movement. So that's the Financial Independence Retire Early movement. Effectively, what it is a financial independence lifestyle movement that entails cutting down on all non-essentials and achieving as high a savings rate as you can. So this means that some people have managed to put aside 75 to 85% savings rates, which are very impressive. But oftentimes one of the criticisms of the FIRE movement is also that it comes with a certain amount of deprivation, right? Because you don't eat out, you don't see friends, that kind of thing. It appears that there is a variant now coming onto the scene, and it's called SlowFi, and it's not the opposite of Wi-Fi. Mr. Personal Finance, Mr. Ringgit and Sense Roshan, what is this? Tell us about it.
SlowFi. I can only guess that it is slow financial independence. But okay, so this is basically off a blog called Minding My 30s, and this is something that's actually been picked up in the personal finance community on Twitter. It was a few days ago. And essentially, it's arguing that, you know, a lot of times the FIRE movement can be quite extreme. And also this, a lot of times a FIRE movement is kind of restrictive to the high income earners who are basically want to work for 10 years, earn a lot of money and save as much as they can and then retire. But there is another way to go about it, right? Because some people, like myself personally, I've always thought that it plays, there's a fine line between being frugal and trying to save money and then depriving yourself of things in life. And if you are the type of person who is happy being completely minimalistic and not buying or doing anything, then that's great. And that gives you a different perspective on life. But that's not for everyone. There is a different way of doing things. I think personally, my belief is that as long as you're being responsible with your money overall, however you see fit, and you're planning for the long term, I think that's okay. This is very interesting because basically it's do it at your own pace, right? The key here is being conscious of what you're spending, conscious expenditure. The minute you start thinking about how you're spending, then you're less susceptible to the whims of instant gratification and the sales that are going on, because now you're just paying more attention to where your money is going. And if you can hit the FIRE movement, great. If you don't, that's good for you as well.
Yeah, so I think the idea is not about depriving yourself, and especially, you know, depriving yourself of important things like eating well, taking care of your health, right? So I think for me, it's very important where I prioritize my expenditure. I mean, like, for example, health is big for me, so I would not scrimp on seeing the best specialist, for example. I'll just see the best, end of story. But I may not, like, buy a lot of clothes. Yeah, so that would be the kind of things of how I would prioritize my life. And so that's, and in some sense, it's also about conscious living, right? You know what you're spending your money on and whether it's going to give you a future return, then that would be classified as an investment. So maybe taking up courses that might earn you more income or give you other kind of intangible pleasure. So these are some things you need to think about when you talk about SlowFi.
Yeah, it's kind of that quote, right? Penny wise, pound foolish. You don't want to be that. You want to be frugal, not cheap. And I know a lot of people confuse this, but personally, the way I look at it, and I think a lot of people look at it, is frugality is just basically prioritizing your money. You're careful with your money. Cheap is just looking for the cheapest option perpetually. You just take rice and curry and that's it. You're not thinking about your health. You're not thinking about your other priorities. Frugality takes context into the situation. So maybe you don't care for subscribing to Twitter if there's a subscription model. So you don't subscribe to that. You don't mind the ads. So you don't pay for Spotify Premium. You don't watch TV. So you don't get Netflix, a Netflix subscription. These are a lot of things that sometimes we take for granted, and it eats into our wallets every month. We just don't realize it.
It is, because it's not, you know, it's always the big ticket items that make us hesitate, right? When if you want to drop a couple hundred on a new piece of technology, you hesitate, you think maybe twice, three times, but you don't necessarily think twice when it comes to paying 10 ringgit for a cup of coffee. If you are paying 10 ringgit for a cup of coffee nearly every day, that builds up as well. So I remember I went through a spate where I was quite consciously tracking my spending, and that was the thing that surprised me most. It was the little expenditures, the 5 ringgit here, the 20 ringgit there, that I would kind of whip out my wallet and pay without a second thought, that really added up by the end of the month.
Yeah, it's just paying attention to those things, right? Now, like, let's say you're someone who spends 10 ringgit of in coffee, a 10 ringgit cup of coffee every day, which is maybe now 12 or 13 ringgit if you're having a latte. You don't think about it because you're, it's just coffee. I'm just having that coffee. But every day that adds up. Now, if you're the type of person who enjoys that cup of coffee, that it makes your day, it brings so much joy to your life, then it's not something you want to cut out. But if you're having it simply because, one, you want caffeine, and two, it's out of habit, then maybe you need to reprioritize where you put that money. And this, I think one of my favorite lines is, you can only manage what you measure. And that's kind of where you can see where you're putting your money.
Yeah, so you know, sometimes a drink for me is a pick me up, right? So at one point, Starbucks was the only option near my house. So I would go to Starbucks. Then there was Papa Rich, and then there was Old Town. Then there were other cheaper options, right? In an aircon space. And so you can imagine where I migrated to, because at the end of the day, it wasn't about the quality of the drink, but rather just the idea of just ordering something, you know, a pick me up, a warm drink, right? Sitting outside.
And it's the environment, it's the kind of the package.
Yeah. Right? And it's like half the cost.
Yes. All of these little things do eventually measure up at the end of the day. So it's important to be aware of them. And if you're interested in more financial discussions, you can always tune into Ringgit and Cents that happens every Thursday at 9:30 a.m. In the meantime, do let us know what you think about this SloFi movement. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have the 6:30 news bulletin coming up for you. But first, some music. The Easy Beats with Friday on My Mind. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Everyday People by Sly and the Family Stone, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. 6:39 a.m, Tuesday the 28th of July, and right now we're turning our attention to what's been happening on the international front. If we look at the US, there has been prolonged unrest in that country for quite a while now, and most recently the Seattle protest has been making news. So police in the US city of Seattle clashed with crowds marching in support of anti-racism protests. So this was one of the most tense in several rallies held across the country. And of the several rallies that happened, there was even an incident in Austin, Texas, where one man was killed during a Black Lives Matter march. In that incident, a car turned into a street where protesters were gathered and started driving through the crowd. When a group of protesters approached, the driver of the car opened fire. So one man was rushed to hospital and later pronounced dead.
Yeah, what we're seeing is a renewed and basically a sort of renewal in the clashes right now, because I think this all stemmed from the Portland protest where the White House sent in, or President Trump sent in, federal agents to basically quell the protest there. Because at that point, there were nightly protests there from the beginning of the protests when the George Floyd protests. And that kind of just escalated things because they came in with an intention to shut down the protests there. And that has just given a renewed vigor to the protests around the country, leading to these to what we're seeing right now, in Seattle, in Austin, in around the country there.
Americans are allowed to carry guns. So some of these demonstrators brought their guns. In Seattle, thousands of protesters had initially gathered peacefully. I think they were carrying signs such as "Feds go home, we are living in a police state," and shouting, they started to shout, "Chants, no justice, no peace." And at the same time, some parts of the country, there were protesters who were protesting against the demonstrators, the anti-racist demonstrators. So, you know, it's getting quite messy. And I think Trump would, I wonder if he's going to continue to be a strong man and about this. And, you know, especially as he's heading towards the elections, he wants to be seen to be having the situation under control.
The question is whether or not Donald Trump is really the right person to have at the helm of the country when it is facing this much unrest, right? Because, you know, whatever other opinions you have on Trump's economic policies, on his interactions with other countries, when it comes to his dealings with his own people, he can, at a lot of the time, still be an inflammatory presence. And the fact is that the U.S. is very divided on a lot of issues. And when it comes to particularly anti-racist sentiment, Donald Trump has not been the most the best leadership figure. He's not been the most pacifying figure. So as a result, there are echoes of almost dissent against his presidency. Sometimes in the Black Lives Matter protests that are echoing around the country, and of course, this also doesn't help that this is coming at a time of COVID-19, when you are also seeing in some areas in the U.S. protests against the imposition of laws, you know, mandating mask usage. All of these things don't help the fact that the U.S. is now one of the leading countries in the world for COVID-19 cases.
It is the leading country. It's got 4.4 million cases now.
Yeah, let's not forget there were, I think, 100 days to the U.S. election, maybe 98 days, if my math is correct. And part of this could be that part, playing the strongman card, making sure that he looks strong. Because end of the day, this is it is seen as a controversial move because he sent in federal help into a Democratic state, there's a Democratic governor there. Kate Brown has asked for the withdrawal of the federal assistance, there is still some dispute of how to take that forward. So there is politics involved in all of this. And the strongman approach has been a staple of Donald Trump's leadership since he started, since even before since the start of the running for his election. Was it 5 years ago at this point?
Yeah, so that's also another aspect of him, is the fact he doesn't see reality. I think when COVID-19 was, you know, when COVID-19 is still happening now, and other countries have managed to successfully, have that situation under control, and they did certain very strict measures, right? But he's not willing to follow those kind of measures. In fact, encouraging people not to wear a face mask. But now he's finally decided to see reality and, you know, wear a face mask. So that's just one aspect of him that he thinks that maybe he thinks this whole thing is a reality show. Who knows?
You know, I don't know whether you've watched the interview, the one-on-one interview with Chris Wallace of Fox News. So Chris Wallace is one of their broadcast journalists who seems to be the most moderate at Fox, right? And he asked Trump a lot of questions, very pointed questions and a lot of follow-up questions that the president just could not answer. Or whenever he's just not used to someone pushing back against him. And it was very interesting to watch because he made factual errors, which they then in post, I think when they put it up to air, that it was they basically fact checked him when they broadcasted the interview, which was fascinating to watch. But just watching how he reacts to being asked tough questions, to being asked clarifying questions, and from a media source that he regards as friendly, because if you've seen any of the press briefings, he's quite hostile to a few media outlets in particular.
You mean the ones that he's branded fake news, like CNN?
I mean, I'm not saying anything there. I'm just pointing out that he is hostile to some channels.
Yeah, the thing is that, I mean, this kind of refusal to acknowledge the severity of COVID-19 isn't solely limited to Donald Trump. It's very typical of a lot of strongmen politicians currently in power around the world.
I think Brazil is another one
of them. And of course, Jair Bolsonaro also was subsequently diagnosed with COVID-19. So there was some irony present in that fact. But the question is, how is this going to continue? And whether or not we're going to see any kind of stability and peace come over the U.S. Before the presidential elections come about in November, and whether or not we're going to see any drop in the COVID-19 cases there, because unfortunately they are, as you said, the leading country in the world for cases at this present time. But right now we have some messages for you, and then we're going to be taking a look at the front pages of our own local newspapers and portals, bringing you the leading stories there. So be sure to stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Cranberries with Animal Instinct, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. Now we're taking a look at the newspapers this morning to see what kind of stories are being brought to you. I've got The Star in front of me, and they've got a headline here, Mask en Masse. So I think that that's referring to the fact that come Saturday, wearing of masks will be mandatory in crowded places as well as on public transport. So this is saying that the health ministry enforces will be paying special attention to commuters to see whether they're wearing masks in public starting Saturday, coupled with an image of what looks like a quarantine check. So police and health ministry officials checking up on someone wearing a pink quarantine tag in their home.
Yeah, so other news on the NST regarding COVID-19. So there'll be a strict limit on Korban activities as well as visitors to the mosque. And this is in anticipation of the Hari Raya Adil Adha celebration. And so Senior Minister Security Cluster, Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob, says that the government has reviewed the SOP and they have decided that not more than 10 animals can be slaughtered at each mosque and surau, including locations allowed by the district religious officers. And also 20 participants to one animal will be allowed to be present. I guess this all makes sense, right? You know, it's public safety and all that. And also new inter-zone travel rules in Sarawak. And also Noor Hisham, Dr. Noor Hisham, he's sounding out this warning, right? The Ministry of Health DG, comply with SOPs or face a third wave.
Yeah, I think that's really the biggest warning that we can possibly have right now, right?
Comply with SOPs or face a third wave. That should be the mantra right now, that every morning or every day when Dr. Sri Ismail Sabri starts his press conference, it should be follow SOPs or we face a third wave. Just kind of remind everyone of the consequences and the potential ramifications that could come from that.
Yeah, so what this means, we are in the second wave now.
Yes. And right now, I'm looking at the Malaysian Reserve front page. We've got two stories here. One is, of course, on the Najib SRC trial verdict that's coming out today. I think it's supposed to be out at 10 a.m. this morning. And the headline they went with was very simple: guilty or innocent. So the High Court will deliver its verdict today on the SRC International case. And really, this has ramifications no matter how you look at it, right? If there's always going to be they speak to a political analyst, Dr. Ahmad Fauzi Abdul Hamid, who basically points out a few different situations. One is if Dr. Sri Najib is found guilty, this could thin out the MPs on Barisan Nasional's side, right? Because if you are found guilty of an offence or are fined above 2,000 ringgit, you can't be in Parliament. So that, I mean, he'll appeal it, and if it really depends how that goes. So that's one thing. Two, Najib still has supporters in UMNO. So if a guilty verdict is found, does that then maybe alienate some UMNO support from the current Perikatan National Government, from Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's coalition? Because right now, we're seeing a razor-thin margin at this point. But at the same time, a guilty verdict is a boost for the legitimacy of the government of the day, internationally speaking. These are just some of the points that this political analyst points out. It really is. Either way, any way you look at it, there are ramifications no matter what. And I think we'll be covering this later at 7:15 with a look on the ground to kind of see what's led to today and kind of remind everyone what happened in this case, what's been going on. And it's been a long 14 months.
Yeah, it's a landmark trial and you'll be a landmark verdict today. It could be anticlimax. Maybe he'll just get a stay of execution and continue to appeal and drag us through, you know, more evidence.
I mean, he has said that even if he does face a guilty verdict today, he's going to take this up to the Court of Appeals and basically bring this as high as it could potentially go. And we expected this, right? Even when this was the trials were first starting to come to light following the change of government in 2018. We knew that this would go on 2, 3, 4 years. So there's still a bit of a road ahead of us. This is just kind of the first road stop, so to speak. The Malay Mail has on eve of verdict, Najib predicts a battle to continue in a court of appeal. It's also got an article on the SOPs to be observed during the Raya celebrations that you mentioned, Noel. I'm just kind of struck by the fact that, you know, I talked about the Star paper, and it is quite a thin paper today. On its third page, this is on page 3 of its Nation. Their article here, taking up half the page, is looking at their Dear Thelma column, which is 34 years old and apparently still going strong. And while I don't deny that Dear Thelma is quite an entertaining column to read, I do wonder whether it really is page 3 material.
This is the Star's priority. Anyway, on page 6 of NST, Wong Chen of PKR is demanding that the government disclose terms of settlement with Goldman Sachs. They've agreed to settle $3.9 billion, of which $2.5 billion is cash. So he wants to know, what about that $1.4 billion? What sort of effort Goldman Sachs is going to put to recover that money? What time frame is Goldman Sachs giving you know, themselves to get that money? So, you know, we spoke to Guna yesterday, and he thinks that we've shortchanged ourselves. So, that's where we are now.
All right, and that is all of the news from the papers that we have for you this morning, because we're about to head into the 7 o'clock bulletin. But after that, we're bringing you more business news and analysis, so be sure to stay tuned. But now we have Baby I'm Yours by the Arctic Monkeys, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.